believe in the Old Testament faith, the book of Nehemiah.
This is our brother, Mr. Jim Hutchinson, well known to us here in the north of Ireland.
Nehemiah, and we will read, please, in chapter 2, reading only verses 9 and 10. Nehemiah chapter 2, at verse 9. Then I came to the governors beyond the river, and gave them the king's letter. Now the king had sent captains of the army and horsemen with me. When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, heard of it, it grieved them exceedingly that there was come a man to seek the welfare of the children of Israel. May the Lord be pleased to bless to us the short reading of the Holy Scripture. I want to try and emphasize, if I can, a man come to seek the welfare of the children of Israel. This is that that God said concerning Nehemiah way in that early day. It was to his credit then. It is to his credit this evening, and will be to his credit throughout eternity. A man to seek the welfare of the children of Israel. It was God who knew the motive of the man who caused this to be recorded. People around may have heard his words and seen his action, but would not have known his motive. But his motives were fully known to God. God caused this to be written about him. I dare not begin to speak about your motive. You dare not begin to speak about mine. We may see each other's actions and listen to each other's words, but we do not know each other's motives. But it's searching for us to remember this evening that God knows our motives. And it's just possible that as Nehemiah has been revealed to us, in a coming day, yours and mine will also be revealed. A man to seek the welfare of the people. In an earlier day, Joseph was asked, "What seekest thou?" And without hesitation, he could say, "My brethren." And he went after them. Paul had to use that word in his day. All seek their own. I think a very solemn statement that came from Paul. Looks around him on every hand. He says, concerning the peace, they seek their own. What did he ask for Timothy? That weak, timid young man, indifferent. He will genuinely, naturally care for your sake. He saw the welfare of God's people. I noticed that this caused Nehemiah to act in at least a threefold way. Notice how he acted toward himself, then toward his brethren, and then toward them that were with us. And notice as we consider these, that the power, the force, the motivating energy behind all of these was this. In what he said, in what he did, the welfare of the people. Perhaps 9 little things could be noted in his attitude and action toward his brethren. First of all, he speaks to them of the condition in which they're found. And while I wouldn't want you to take time to look at it now, it's interesting to notice. He doesn't speak in a critical, harsh, hurting way. Rather, he seems to me to be sympathetic in his approach and speaks to them of the condition in which they were found. Then he seeks to encourage them. We would have said, but you can't encourage people in such condition. But Nehemiah thought, and encourages them by speaking to them of the good hand of his God upon him. Then we notice that he exhorts them with a view to better. Then later you'll notice that he puts them upon their guard while encouraging them and exhorting them to building, and he says, now, take heed and take an instrument in your hand that can be used in defense. Well, there are dangers. Then he seeks to introduce amongst them the fear of God. Then he says to them, bring the book. Then he enjoins preparation upon them. Chapter 13. Then he speaks to them about having neglected the Levite portion. And then finally he speaks to them of their desecration of the Sabbath. And each of these 9 things were prompted in the heart of Nehemiah by this, the welfare of the people. Four or five things noted in relation to his attitude to the outsider, those who are not the people of God. First of all, he says to them, now you have no portion in this. We're not going to have an unholy mixture. You have no portion in this. Then he says, I'm not going to have meetings with you down in the place. No ecumenical spirit was with that of Nehemiah. Then we read that he cast out their stuff. Then we actually read that he kissed a certain man from him. Ah, some would have said, but now Nehemiah, you surely let them share a little bit. You at least have consultations with them. And you retain a little of their stuff. You do not go so far as to chase a man away. But he did. Why? The welfare of the people. I want you now to come and notice how he acted toward himself, if you like. How it affected him personally. First of all, we notice that it led him to inquire. And when he was making inquiry, he desired to be accurate. And consequently, he inquired from someone who had a first-hand knowledge. So it wasn't that he was inquiring from a mere itch for news, or to have something to talk about and pass on to others. Far deeper and more important than that. He's seeking their welfare, and he's anxious to know exactly what their condition is. Or if he doesn't know what their condition is, how can he start to be a help to them? He needs to know. I said, not for me, O God. And he sought to be accurate. He went to the fountain head. Maybe a challenge to us. I'm inclined to think that there's too much idle talk. Too much rumor. Too many things based upon speculation. Wonder do we ever think of that word that Jesus said? Every idle word. I know there's more in telling this, but I'm asked, but it will bear this at least. You know, at times it's almost startling. Stories that go about the context. And the things that are given to gospel truth are not a vestige of truth in them. The reason being, that people don't stop to make what the Bible speaks of us. Diligent inquiry. A little time ago, a brother said to me, I'd like to have a word with you. And I nearly knew by the look on his face he wasn't too happy with that. I said, certainly I'll talk to you. Sit down there. And I sit down, but tried him to speak. Now, I said, I tell you what I've heard. And said, when I'm finished, you can give me the facts, for you know them. listened. And when he finished, I said, "Is that all?" He said, "Yes, that's all." And I said, "I'll give you the facts. And in just a few words, I'll give them to you. And at least this is to be said to be kept." "Well," said he, "Brother Jim, that's not what I have." And said he, "I'm completely satisfied." That finishes the matter, as far as I'm concerned. Nehemiah makes diligent inquiry and gets back. He has a fruit. Secondly, it led him to weep. Now, from what I said earlier, you could see that Nehemiah was a strong, firm man. But he wasn't one of these hard, mechanical, stoical kind of folk. But couldn't be touched and softened. My, those strong, firm man he was. I see him sitting down to weep. I am to weep as if his heart was breaking. I might have felt to say, "But Nehemiah, why you're here? What's wrong? You've a good position. You live in a good home. You're moving in a splendid circle. What's wrong, Nehemiah?" I think he would likely amidst the tears have looked at me and said, "How can I do else but weep? Listen to what I've heard. I've heard that God's beloved people, so dear to God and so dear to me, they're in affliction. They're in reproach. The walls are broken down, and the gates are burned with fire. How can I do else but weep when I hear of such conditions amongst the people of God?" I don't want to be pessimistic, but mind you, it's just possible. Now, in many circles, we made diligence in prayer. We would hear that God's people are in affliction. But let us forget their song tonight in prison. The lonely and broken. Many of them in mental institutions. Many of them in hospitals. Many in pain and sorrow at home. Some of them are in reproach. Yes, because of their fidelity and loyalty to Christ and to His truth. Some of them because of their own misdeeds. They're in reproach. Some places the walls are perhaps broken down. Now in Nehemiah the wall was not built to keep the people in. But what the people gather to the center, and God's people still gather to the center. Walls are not built to keep God's people in. But the wall was built to keep the word and things pertaining to it outside. In Nehemiah's case, that wall is broken down. I need you to think about it. Is it not possible that here and there the wall is broken down? And today I've heard that the gifts, places of the administration of government and judgment, the burn of fire. Maybe There are a whole lot of places that godly order and administration and government of the New Testament seems to suggest. Put into the hands and hearts of men of God with a seal before them. It's not what it used to be or what it ought to be. Nehemiah hears this, and he sits down and weeps. Speaking in an assembly here in the city, had a good number of years ago, I went to visit a preacher, widow, not with us now, she's with Christ. Many of you knew her. She said, what kind of morning meeting do they have? I tried to tell her. What's the gospel like of the evening? I tried to tell her. She said, what about the Sunday school? I told her, you know, the dear old woman didn't say a word. She stood, and the tears trickled fast down her cheeks. Then, in what seemed to me to be now, she said it didn't used to be like that. My brother, I put it to you this evening. My sister, know anything about this? A burden, a tear, a care for the afflicted, for those in the boat, or even those for the walls are broken down and the enemies get again, even where there may be disorder, lack of will, do we know anything of Nehemiah and the sacrifice? I think it was McLaren, the writer, who said, that no man will ever worthily be who hasn't first wept over the roof. We could get men and women, young and old, whose hearts would be reached, whose sincere motive would be the welfare of the sick, even to the point that the fountain of their tears would be broken. I would think we'd be on the way to that effect. Let him to do a third thing. Pray. There are quite a number of references to prayer in this little book, Nehemiah. Maybe 8 times he reads, he prays. And I think the same writer that I've just now referred to has suggested that his praying and reading lasted at least 4 months. Just wasn't an emotional feeling for an hour or two or a couple of meetings with him for 4 months. Mind you, it might help our assembly prayer meetings and some of our public prayers if we would take a few minutes and read Nehemiah's prayer. At least it would shorten some of the prayers we have to listen to. They were every one brief. And just think of how much was contained in these. First of all, we notice that his prayer was marked by earnestness. You couldn't fail to see that in these opening verses of the book when he sits down and weeps and prays. Marked by earnestness. If you were to look at verse 5, you'll notice it was marked by knowledge. He indicates that he had a knowledge of who God was and of what God was.
was marked by importunity. He says day and night. He was marked by confession. He confessed the sins of the people. Ah, but I want you to notice just in passing that he didn't get away up on the pedestal and stand back and confess the sins of the people and say, Lord, look at the plight that they've got themselves into and think of their condition and how they departed and their sin and all the rest of it. Ah, no, the dear man includes himself. He said, we have sinned and so our power. Confession. Mind you, it might help us. If we do a little bit more of confession to God. As I hinted the other night in the meeting, maybe a little bit more of confession. One to another. It all seems strange. It's about the very last thing we'll even acknowledge to God that we're wrong. And it's about the very last thing we'll do is to acknowledge to a fellow believer, I'm wrong. Say I'm sorry. Nehemiah, prayers were marked by confession. They were marked by faith. He reminds God of his promise that they sinned, he would scatter. But if they repented, he would gather. And then you'll notice his prayer was marked by a spirit of consecration. He cries that God would hear the prayer of those who desire to hear his name. Prayer. Long time since I heard the late Mr. Joseph Stewart say, and I didn't misunderstand him, and I know you won't, that he would rather have one praying woman than six preaching men. Now, he wasn't making light of preaching men. You know I'm not either. But in his experience in the things of God, he had learned to value the prayer of the faith. And I see Nehemiah praying, as I've hinted a moment ago, perhaps for these four long, weary months. Mingling his prayers with his tears. And why? The welfare of the people. I'm going to pause for just a minute and put it to you, brethren. Friend, did you laugh? Spend a little while in prayer with God about the welfare of your assembly. I put it to you, sisters, just the same. Now, please be candid and honest. Maybe if I asked you when you spent the last little while talking about the failures of so and so, it mightn't be so hard to answer as the first question. Far too much occupation with them, far too much time spent in talking about these matters. But not enough time spent in praying about them. Nehemiah prayed. Notice the next thing it led him to do. Verse I read with you, it says, verse 11, so I came to Jerusalem. First of all, you see him identifying himself with the people. He's done that in his confession. He's done that in his prayer. Now he's actually doing it in person. And what the hunter was speaking to was about Moses. And very often, and rightly so, emphasis is put upon the fact that Moses sacrificed the graving, and he did. Hardly ever do you hear much said about the sacrifice that Nehemiah here made. And he makes it to identify himself with the people of God. Now, we'd like you to say, well, it's a pity. Right enough, we'd like to see them doing better. And we'll just put up a wee quiet, silent prayer here, but I go on with presenting the king with a cup. And I not leave the splendor of the court and all that goes with us. With Nehemiah, I leave the splendor of the court. I leave the easy occupation. And I go to where they are in their affliction, in their approach. Ah, but some would say, but you couldn't get near those people. Look how far away they've got.
And you couldn't go to that place. You know, the walls are burned down. Nehemiah, don't do that.
So God's people, Nehemiah, I'm going to them.
It's God's place.
I'm going to it. Now just note in passing that. He wasn't going to it to encourage them in their wrongdoings or to further help them in their departure from God. But he was going to them because he sought the welfare of the people and is prepared to be identified with their approach. Paul had the privilege of preaching the gospel in Corinth. He saw them saved, baptized, an assembly formed. They had the disappointment of seeing that they got wrong to such an extent that I couldn't take time to dwell upon it this evening. But isn't it most significant that never once do I hear Paul's death to the Lord, cast them off, abandon them. Repeatedly, he even writes and talks about coming to them. You sharpen that into your mind and heart. Why? He sought their welfare. And I'm closing with this encouraging little word. You time to take a book, could read chapter 8 of Nehemiah. Further on, you'll find an almost dramatic change. The affliction finished, the approach is removed, the walls rebuilt, the gates are set in order, and the message is sent throughout today. There's to be joy, no more grieving, and so on. And humanly speaking, all attributable to this one point. There's one man, and his motive before God was honest and pure. And he sought the welfare of the people. Do I see the Corinthians? Very far away in the first epistle. But in the second epistle, I see better conditions. I see happier days. Attributable to a man who under God thought have passed. All the people. Could I lovingly appeal to my brethren as I said? Neither did some of you younger men starting out and taking a little interest in the things of God. Try and get your motives regulated in the presence of God. Try and set your sights on this. The good of God's people and the glory of His name. And listen, you sister, you could fit into this as well. And it would fit into what Mr. Goody opened the conference with. A Christian, wholly dedicated Christian, consecrated the way and things of God. And I can assure you, infinitely better than anything this poor glittering world can offer you. For mind you, your gold will rest and wear away. Your honor perish in death. This poison never can be kept. May God help to seek His glory and the welfare.